Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
The Fox Sports 1 show, like the whatever one of their yell shows is in the morning. I think it was whatever show it is. If the Commanders don't get to a Super Bowl this year, it's a failure because they were in the NFC title game last year. That's just so patently incorrect.
You got to realize who you're dealing with. Keyshawn has always said outlandish BS.
Right.
Getting there and to get to where you got last year, a lot of great things had to work for you. It don't automatically mean it's going to happen the next. And that's what real people who talk real football and sports understand. You get there one year, it doesn't automatically mean you're going the next year. You got to get better. You can't have a lot of injuries, you know, and you know how I am about the injury thing, but that scares the hell out of me sometimes. When a team go through a year and they don't have many, I'm worried about the next one. Because 9 times out of 10 in this league, you don't have complete health for year after year after year. It doesn't go like that.
So. Right. Yeah, dude. Every year is its own entity. Every week is its own entity.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Like in the NBA, you can pencil the Nuggets in for they're a title contender because they have Jokic, right? Because it's five players on the court. You got 53 dudes. You got 45 guys. You got legitimately 35 dudes playing at least half of your snaps every week.
Yeah.
And damn near every week, you have probably a season-ending injury, if not a dude's out for a month. Like, it's just a constant evolution.
Uh-huh.
Constant. So, to surmise any one thing, like, to me, I got asked this on All Ears the other night, B. What should be reasonable expectations for Washington this year? My belief is when you land a quarterback, when the Saints had Drew Brees, when the Chargers had Phillip Rivers, right? When you land a quarterback, and I don't care about the rankings, right? Like, I'm not saying he's top five. I'm not saying he's top eight. Wherever he lands, Washington has a quarterback now. And generally, when you have a quarterback, you should be talking, thinking about the divisional round of the playoffs.
There you go.
Once you get there, who the hell knows what happens?
There you go.
But that should be your expectation.
Yeah. But, like, man, listen, bro. I've listened to some of Keyshawn's shows. Him and Paul Pierce. Both of those dudes are trying to say the craziest thing they can say. I sit back, I look at it, and then I realize, okay, Keyshawn came to this league with a lot of expectations, right? Did he live up to them?
No.
Hell no.
Those tequila shots.
So I don't
want
to hear that crap.
Those tequila shots at Beverly Hills with Paul Pierce did you in, though. I remember that.
So I did want to get a little NFL in. Obviously, it's you know, March Madness, and that's the focus. But today the Commanders are having a ton of players on Zoom. A lot of the guys that re-signed, some of the new guys, Nick Ballore is talking right now, the special team stud for them. There's been a number of folks talking, but Brian, as we kind of like get further and further into this, you know, I think it's becoming clearer where Washington has done well, maybe where they haven't and where they still have holes.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you get through the free agency period and realize what they added on the offensive line, all the people asking for O-line help should feel satisfied, I think.
Yeah.
One of the best left tackles in football.
I think they should.
And what that does is let you get better all over the field.
I agree with that.
Where they maybe didn't get better yet that a lot of folks expected was D-line, specifically maybe pass rusher. On CBS.com, they wrote about where teams got better and what their biggest hole is. For the Commanders specifically, they said edge rusher. I'll read this now. Washington has a lot of DNs who will be firm at the point of attack and give the franchise a high floor and run defense. The issue is that they lack any and all explosiveness off the edge. University of Tennessee's James Pierce Jr. would give them something they sorely lack among that group. Ideally, they would draft a cornerback capable of starting on the boundary and allow Mikey Samerstill to move back into the slot. How much do you think a rookie pass rusher can hit the ground running?
A pass rusher is a pass rusher. And I think the thing about it, if they have someone that they see as a first round grade, and then the way that I keep saying it, the way I see how I saw last year, how this coaching staff can coach up talent, I think you can expect to get a damn good push from them. Because what they did, they got bigger inside. And I think that allows a lot of one-on-one battles. We saw Chase came in his first year. They're good his
the
first
second
year.
Half of the year, he was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think because didn't he have that little groin thing early in the season?
Yeah, I think yeah. He tweaked the groin.
So if you come in here, you're healthy, I think you have a chance because that's all they do in college now is throw the football. And you have to be good at pass rushing.
And while the challenge gets harder, the physical skill set of rushing the passer doesn't change.
It doesn't.
Maybe you want to add a move or work on a counter. Like, not to say there's not ways to continue to get better.
Yeah.
But like rushing the passer is rushing the passer.
100%.
I think by far, you know, I don't know if what will happen with Hendrickson. Maybe Cincinnati cuts another check and they're able to rework that deal. He remains kind of the jewel of the unknown right now in the NFL. But I think one of the reasons the Bengals made their move to re-sign Higgins and Chase, because they recognized we have Burrow. Like, we have the hardest part of this. Let's keep him happy. Keep this explosive offense. Maybe we can figure out the defensive side of this.
Yeah.
Or
maybe they can score more points than the other team will score against their defense.
Hey, we're going to give up 50, but we'll score 60. Who knows?
You'll see.
Reading from CBS, the Bengals' biggest need is edge rusher. Cincinnati is committed to executing contract extensions with wide receivers Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And one would assume those moves will prevent them from securing pass rusher Trey Hendrickson long term, though the team is reportedly trying to retain him. In the event that Hendrickson is gone, and following the news of Sam Hubbard's retirement, the Bengals are left without former first-round pick Miles Murphy and Joseph Asai, who re-signed at a modest rate. The moves to bolster their interior defensive line leave edge rusher as a more pressing need. So the Bengals need edge also. But I wanted to run through something. The Hendrickson move remains out there. I did see the Eagles just signed Azeez Ojulari, a guy that I was really high on for a pretty modest deal, and they got him pretty modestly.
So. He's like, one-year deal, something like that?
One-year deal with Philly, yeah. Help me count on this, because this is definitively something Washington does not need. Going through the entire NFL, what would you say the biggest need for the Cleveland Browns is?
Quarterback.
What would you say the biggest need for the Pittsburgh Steelers is?
Quarterback.
Okay, that's two. I think for the Colts, you could still argue quarterback, but they'll claim they solved that with Daniel Jones.
Didn't they let their running back go too?
Taylor, I think, is still there.
But they need O-line and a quarterback.
All right. Some of this is a – how is the Raiders – I guess because they traded for Geno. This is crazy. Like, Giants quarterback, obviously.
Yeah.
Seahawks are hoping that Darnold is their guy. But
he's really cocky these days, too, though.
Darnold?
I saw something with it. He's brash. Peacocking.
Good for him, I guess. Not sure I agree with that assessment, but, you know, good for him. Like, could you say the Jaguars' biggest need is D tackle and not? I recognize you paid Trevor Lawrence.
They paid him, and then
you got to get him to play.
Yeah, but when you got a quarterback first rounder who's paid like that, they feel they got their guy. They just think they need other people around them. I disagree, but you know, so it is.
What would you say the Titans' biggest need is?
You got a quarterback that eats mayonnaise and put mayonnaise in coffee. I think you need a quarterback and he needs a brain transplant.
Yeah, this is nuts. I recognize the Jets got a short-term deal done with Justin Fields, but that, like, all these teams, they are making dramatic assumptions. Like, you know what? The Chiefs' biggest need is not quarterback.
Hell no.
That one I agree with. I thought this was fascinating, though. Cam Hayward. I don't know that he's a Hall of Famer. But he's a really good player and has been for a long time. And he might be, honestly.
He might be Hall of Fame.
I mean, he's been really good for a long time. 7-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro. Played his whole career in Pittsburgh. Understands what that team is about. Of all the teams to get yanked around by Aaron Rodgers and his self-absorption, I don't get it with Pittsburgh. And Cam Hayward, this was on a podcast, right, Landfill? Cam Hayward was asked about Aaron Rodgers, and I thought the answer was pretty interesting.
So if they called you and were like, we need you to follow him into the darkness for a couple days, if he says if you come down there with him, he's signing. Are you going to be off the grid for a little bit, go to the darkness and try to get this guy? We need you. You're our best recruiter. I'm about to get to Darius Slay, and it sounds like you recruited him too. So we need you to start recruiting. Get that NIL bag out like you did at Ohio State.
I ain't doing that darkness retreat. I don't need any of that crap. Like, either you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler or you don't. That's simple. That's the pitch. Like, if you want me to recruit, that's the recruiting pitch. You know, Pittsburgh Steelers, if you want to be part of it, so be it. If you don't, no skin on my back.
Yeah, that's what he needs, though. That's what Aaron Rodgers needs. Somebody who probably is as big as him with the mindset. And he's bigger than him physically.
Yeah.
That ain't going to take his ish. They're going to let him know, dude, we're not playing these games with you no more. You can run to your boy on ESPN and let him blow you up, but we're going to whoop you down. You won't be here, you don't buy. They've been losing with other quarterbacks. They can lose with him. They can lose. They can not get him and probably go out there and lose again. No, they've been in the playoffs most times without one of those quarterbacks.
They win with other quarterbacks.
So I'm not going to lose my mind over Aaron. Aaron is full of crap, man.
Cam Hayward, 6'5", 3 Bills. I didn't realize his father is Ironhead Hayward.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just looked that up.
Me and Ryan, just go at it, boy.
Really?
Yeah.
Over what? Like playing?
Yeah, but he ran on some special teams at one point.
Uh-huh.
You just got to hit him low. Can't run up and couldn't hit him tight.
Yeah, you guys overlapped a lot.
Yeah.
He
and I beat some in the Pro Bowl. We won the skills competition.
Oh, that's
against
cool.
Two other running backs.
Remember the Ironhead?
Hey, Ironhead!
What's that thingy? The soap commercial, whatever that was. I feel like that was the first like body wash that existed in like mass production. So what I liked about Cam Hayward is he's like, yo, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not doing that. Can you believe that Pittsburgh is going to these ends to deal with him?
Yeah, because the reason that they are doing it, everyone feels they need that guy at that position, the quarterback. But you gotta get like the players sometimes. You've been around players. You think a guy is unbelievable, and then the players, when they tell you the truth off record, they let you know what they truly think about that player. That's how the players are open with it now. They're letting Aaron know ahead. You come in here, dog, you're going to fall into line. You're not going to come up here with all that BS you've been doing somewhere else. But the front office, they feel, oh, we need somebody like him. Not knowing that he'll walk in the locker room and completely screw up the chemistry.
Totally.
Players know that already. They be around him. They've seen him places. They talk to people on the team with him. They know exactly what he's about.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Does it make any sense to you that Minnesota's interested in him?
Yeah. The other kid is still a rookie. He hadn't played much. And he's coming off injury.
Yeah. I think I might still just be out. I think I'm just out of... the Rodgers business. And I think there was a long time when
a man wanted to go run for vice president, all this stuff. Go do something else. Leave football alone. Football is good enough. It's popular enough without all the extra BS.
I agree. I totally agree.
God, can you make me 24, 25 again in my prime and put me on the team with Aaron Rodgers? I'll do what everybody needs done for him. Please.
Going around the NFC East at what the biggest needs are for the rest of the teams, it is for the Eagles, they say safety. They traded away C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I know that much. Philadelphia has replacement-level players or better at every position, so need is a relative term.
DeJean is a corner or a safety?
DeJean, to me, is more of a safety. More of a corner, rather.
More of a corner? I thought he played kind of like more of a safety. He's back a lot. But then again, you got that front up there. You don't really. You can put an average safety. He's going to look above average.
One dude to watch is this Gamecock, Nick Amanawori. Hopefully I'm saying that right. His athletic testing from the combine was unbelievable. Honestly, probably moved him up into the first round. He could be around when Washington picks.
Richardson was off the charts too.
Who, AR?
The quarterback. Yeah, he was off the charts. Sometimes people are just good at that. Can they play the position?
I thought Amanawori was pretty good too.
All right.
Giants, shockingly, quarterback.
I need more than the quarterback.
I'm reading now.
I need a
doctor coach, said I need a backyotomy.
They need a coach and they need a GM.
New York is twiddling its thumbs as it awaits the free agent decision of Aaron Rodgers. The team could lose out on Russell Wilson and Rodgers in theory. The Giants were already considered desperate and likely to make an offer for the number one overall selection in order to take Miami quarterback Cam Ward. It is a make or break year for head coach Brian Daboll and general manager Joe Shane, and their actions support that idea. How's that sound, White Brian?
Not great.
I know one thing that happened in Washington when the team had, I don't know, 85 years of history as the Redskins, and then they had to change the name, and they relied on Ron Rivera, who's a nice man and understands the history of the NFL, but he had no ties to the region or fandom of the Burgundy and Gold, and he had this major role in picking a new name, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a Giant fan and Daboll and Joe Shane barely survived this season, I don't want those two to be in charge of engineering some major draft day trade to move up from 3 to 1 to get a quarterback.
Yeah, but if the scouting department has come in there and they are really, really sure of him, of Cam Ward, and I know you know it's not just Joe and picking it, I can go with that. If I'm the owner, I'm walking in, call a director of scouting over, I'm going to call some other people, I'm going to have a real conversation with them, what you think about this kid. If they can tell me, yes, I would take him. All right, if I get rid of Shane and which call him, which you still, yes, I like him. I'll take him then. But if they say, well, Joe was really liking him, so, you know, then I'm like, oh, I don't want him. Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's for the owner to do his due diligence.
Yeah.
Can't just sit back and think, oh, they go, everybody going to just tell you what you need. No. Go talk to me. You have a right to talk to anybody on the team you want to talk to as the owner.
So let's get down to the brackets. If you follow Neil Greenberg like I do, you can do so at N Greenberg on X, the Everything app, also known as Twitter and Instagram. N Greenberg is where you follow him. Neil joins us via the Rude Guest Hotline. You just I think it was today, maybe it was yesterday afternoon, you posted your 10 steps to winning your March Madness pool. Take us through the steps, brother. Let's get rich.
Yeah, so the first thing you want to do is you want to get a sense of how big the pool is. The larger the pool, the more risk you want to take because you need to have a unique bracket. If you're in a smaller pool, like 10 people, then it could be chalkier. If you enter one of the, like these ESPN pools, then you want to really be like off the wall a little bit because, you know, everyone's going to have Florida advancing, everyone's going to have Houston advancing, et cetera. And I also start my bracket with the Elite Eight. I try to figure out who's going to be in the Elite Eight because that cuts down a lot of my decision-making for the bracket. So I know if I have my eight, then I just kind of pencil them through the rest, and then I have to make fewer decisions throughout the whole bracket.
Interesting.
I would say don't go crazy picking upsets, especially this year. I think last year we saw a very chalky bracket. I think we're going to see a chalky bracket this year as well. Just the increase in analytics usage is getting a lot of the teams right in both the field but also in seeding. And on paper, this looks like to be one of the strongest high-seeded brackets in a long time. So don't go crazy on upsets. That being said, I mean, there's some 12 seeds that are already favored in the betting markets, like Colorado State. Number 11, North Carolina, is a slight favorite as well. Those are really great upsets to take in the first round because not a lot of people follow the betting market. So they may just see an 11 seed and think, oh, there's no chance to win. But as I said, they're favored in the betting market. So those are pretty easy round of 64 picks to take. And I would say my last thing, even though there are 10, but I would say the last most important, I think the SEC is overrated, and I would fade a lot of these teams, Auburn, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, Missouri. I'd fade a lot of those teams in the bracket and just go with some other picks.
Greenberg, do you care? One of our video producer, White Brian, is an Auburn guy, and he's just shaking his head at you. Do you care if he gets to respond here?
Oh, no, let's get him on.
Fire away, White Brian. I know you don't like it.
I think we've almost gotten to the point where so many people are fading Auburn. I'm not worried about the fact that they're kind of limping into this tournament.
Well, you never want to limp. I think what's going to hurt Auburn, I think, ultimately, is they send their opponents to the free throw line quite a bit. And that doesn't seem like it's a big, you know, hiccup, but when you're looking at one-and-done tournaments, when you're looking at what usually fuels upsets, there's a lot of fingerprints. And you know, the lower-seeded teams are typically move on when they're able to grab a lot more offensive rebounds, create turnovers, but also get extra points, easy points, at the free-throw line. And I would say Auburn, you know, does have a challenge in that regard. They do pretty well defending the three, but they, again, I mean, I think if they're going to start sending the opponents to the free throw line, that's going to create some extra easy possessions. And also, they don't really play very fast. You know, they have a very efficient offense, second best in the country. Defense is very good, but they also play at a pretty slow tempo. So while their offense is efficient, it only takes a couple of botched shots to make it so that the other team can keep the score close.
Well, so here's my counter to, I think specifically like talking to Greenberg here, myself and White Brian, we are so inside all this stuff, right? That we're looking at the betting markets, we're looking at their last five, we're looking at net or all these quad one wins, whatever like metrics are available. And I can see why Brian's point, like, oh, everybody thinks Auburn's cooked, which makes me like them more. But like, ignore all that. Strip all that away, right? Why did they lose three of their last four, White Brian?
You put teams on the free throw line, they didn't make their free throws, and they struggled rebounding, which makes me terrified of Creighton.
Okay. See, that I think is more real analysis than like, oh, everybody's zigging, I'm going to zag. Even if a big-eared radio host often says that, I just think, who do you think the best team in the tournament is, Greenberg?
Well, I think Duke's the best team. I think Maryland is the best value. And I actually have Maryland beating Duke in the final.
Whoa!
Whoa. I think Duke...
You have Maryland winning the title in your bracket?
Yeah, I think so.
Talk about burying the lead, Greenberg.
I'm sorry, no, I have Duke over Maryland. Sorry. I have Duke over Maryland.
You have Maryland in the final?
Yeah, I have... And actually, if I'm going to be putting it in like a big bracket, I probably flip that. I probably have Maryland winning.
All right, but that is about... All right, let's, so everybody understands this. We're talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here on the Rude Guest Hotline. If you're joining a 2,000-person bracket or just like one of these super 8 million people brackets on ESPN.com, or I'm sure the Post has one. I'm guessing Odyssey has... Like every big company has one of these things, right?
Right.
Your theory there is don't go with the chalk because everybody has the chalk. You gotta do something different, and that's right. In that scenario you like Maryland.
Yeah, so like if you're looking at, you know, I would say any pool with more than 150 people, a team like Maryland would be very enticing to me as a championship play. When you look at like the ESPN People's Bracket, a lot of people have, it's almost split between Florida and Duke to win the title in the title game. So right away, I probably don't have either of those teams winning it, because you just have to be so much more right in the early parts of the bracket. If, you know, half the bracket is going to have Duke winning, half the bracket is going to have Florida winning. You know, the only real way to like differentiate yourself is to have neither winning.
Right. And I imagine everybody's going to like, I imagine 75% of brackets have either Duke or Florida winning.
Right. Both these things are true. I think Duke is the best team in the bracket and has the best chance of winning. I would not necessarily pick Duke in every type of bracket I'm in, because everyone's going to be, they're going to be a very popular choice, right? So there's like realistic March Madness talk, and then there's, you know, how do I maximize my bracket talk? So, you know, you depending on like what kind of conversation we're having here, but in terms of brackets, like I have Duke beating Maryland. I feel like Maryland in the final is enough of a differentiator where if Duke does win, I still think my bracket can be unique. But if I'm in, you know, a really, really large bracket, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, then I absolutely would have a team like Maryland winning it all.
Okay. So let me back out of that. Maryland's a comfortable favorite against Grand Canyon. I think Maryland will be favored over the winner of Memphis, Colorado State, should they advance. Although I am a little nervous of Colorado State, I'll be honest with you. You are comfortable. Forget trying to win your bracket. You think Maryland can beat Florida in 40 minutes of basketball?
Oh, yeah. And if you look at my tweets, actually, I was on the show. I've been talking about Maryland on the show for a couple of weeks.
You have.
Like, so this isn't really like necessarily a surprise. I think Maryland's a very good team. I think Colorado State is going to beat Memphis. That's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But look, all teams have a challenge at some point. I think Connecticut in this bracket is really tough for both Maryland and Florida. I think Connecticut could be really undervalued in the tournament. And if I'm in a big, you know, if I'm like in a huge thing, I would even consider, you know, moving Connecticut past the Sweet 16. You know, if I'm putting in a couple of brackets to differentiate. And this is a tough bracket. Like, Connecticut being here kind of jammed me up a little bit because I really like Connecticut. I like both BYU and VCU to make a deep run. They play each other in the round of 64. That kind of jammed me up a little bit. So, you know, you have to make decisions here. But, as you know, as I said, I've been talking about Maryland for a while on the show. I thought they were going to be a lot better than their seeding. I think they're obviously a really talented team. They like to play fast. They take care of the ball on offense. They're very, very good defensively, limiting rebounds. They don't send opponents to the free throw line. They're pretty good at generating turnovers. Like, they do a lot of the things that you want a good tournament team to do for a deep run.
Listen, man. I had a plan. I'll never understand why in the hell Arizona's the four seed in the East and Maryland's the four seed in the West. Sure seems like you should swap those. I had a plan of going to Newark, New Jersey to watch Maryland play Duke in the Sweet 16. But Greenberg, if you're telling me I got to fly to San Antonio to watch Maryland play Duke in the finals, I will be there, sir.
look, that's what I have. I mean, these are all educated guesses.
Sure,
But
I get that.
But that's what I have right now. And like I said, I've been on Maryland for a little bit. There's no reason for me to jump off now.
I feel like I know you well enough. I think the 5-12 upset has gotten to be like too mainstream. And I think if you're actually looking for an upset, you need to go lower. You got anybody 13 or below getting to the Sweet 16?
Actually, I think the 11 seed is way better value than the 10 seed. I think North Carolina is going to be really good. I've been on them a little bit. I talked about VCU. I think I've even talked about VCU on the show. I think that they're good. I don't know if I'd go lower in this bracket than the 12 seed. But I like number 10, New Mexico. I like 12, Liberty. I think McNeese State has a shot.
I think they're just McNeese now. They dropped the state.
Yeah, McNeese, I'm sorry.
Yeah, get it right.
Utah State, 10 seed, I think they can be okay. We talked about number 12, Colorado State, being favored, and possibly number 10, Arkansas. So I actually like the 10, 11, and 12 seed line a lot more than I like the 13 and below. But I did tweet out the most likely upsets by seed, and at 13, you had Yale. 14, you had Troy. 15, Nebraska, Omaha, and then 16 was Norfolk State.
Norfolk State. All right. Yo, if Norfolk State took down Florida, we're including Norfolk State in the B. Mitch and Finley DMV for the March Madness tournament. They count from we go from Norfolk to Emmitsburg, Maryland, Greenberg.
Oh, wow.
They'd have my full support. I think they're the Spartans, Norfolk State Spartans.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a historic upset, so I'm not saying that they're going to do it. I'm just saying most likely team at that seed for an upset would be Norfolk.
I want to make sure we get time for some hockey, but St. John's, man, I am fascinated by what that second round matchup, assuming St. John's beats Omaha, they're playing. It's Patino going against Bill Self, or even juicier, Patino going against John Calipari. I find that fascinating. I know that the Johnnies play really tough, really good defense, but they can't really score. And I fear if St. John's gets a quick whistle against some really good athletes on Kansas or Arkansas, I feel like that could be – I'm guessing you're from Queens. Like, did you grow up loving St. John's?
All right, so St. John's was very close to where I lived. I almost went there. They've been my favorite collegiate basketball team for as long as I can remember. I'm so happy to see them doing so well. I am fading St. John's. I do not think they're going to make it out of the opening weekend. I have them losing to Kansas. Here's the thing about St. John's. They're having a great run, but I do think that a lot of it is hype. I am fading St. John's. Maybe I'm not allowed to go to the corner pizza place anymore with that. I am not a fan of St. John's in this tournament. I'm fading them to go home pretty early.
Dude, I kind of think I am too. I just think a lot of it will determine on the whistle because they play so physical, and I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how it goes.
And you know, if I'm saying that, like, that's something that I believe, and it pains me.
Can I ask a different question, Greenberg?
Sure.
I believe in our conversations, I think you're a proud member of the tribe, correct? Is would go to St. John's not impact that?
if they gave me the right scholarship, I was going.
Hey, money talks, so talk mo bucks.
Plus, at the time, there's no on-campus housing, so they actually gave you money to live off campus, which was very appealing to someone that does not like any sort of parental supervision or supervision of any kind. And for me to be able to run amok even more so than I did as a kid in Queens was very appealing.
J.I. Halsell is on the line. I'm guessing he's out in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. J.I., what up, dude?
What's going on, fellas? I am out here in beautiful Arizona.
Yeah, you out there with all that good weather, man.
Yeah, but
don't rub it in.
That's right. That's right.
Don't rub it in.
It's going to be 79 degrees and sunny today.
Yeah, talk to me in August.
I don't even mind.
It'll be 115 and I'll be in a nice pool.
Dude, after finally experiencing the dry heat, I don't mind it. I'm cool with it. But
man, we had hell with that stuff out there when we were there.
Dude, I liked that better than the humidity in Tampa. Anyway.
All day long.
All right, J.I., I texted you yesterday to talk about this Debo restructure for the Commanders. And more information has come out. Basically, they were going to have to pay him this $15 million roster bonus. So they just they kind of converted it to a little bit more guaranteed money. And it allows them to get completely out of the deal at the end of this season. You know, with what we know now,
it kind of looks like this is actually to Washington's advantage.
Yeah, I think, you know, well, he was I haven't seen the details, but I know he was in the final year of his deal anyway. When he without having seen the details, if there are voidable years added on there to try to reduce the cap number, because otherwise he was already on a 1-year deal coming to Washington. So the only reason why you would guarantee some of the existing compensation would be to get some of that cap relief. And then you add some incentives in there to try to make them motivated so that maybe down the road this season you end up with a contract extension. But either way, you know, from a cap management standpoint, they felt like the contract that they traded for from San Francisco required some revising to make it better for their cap management purposes.
I think that kind of adds up to me. Yeah. What do you think about where Washington is salary cap wise as far as if another move was to come?
I think that they're in great shape. And look, you know, it's a copycat league, right? And so when you see how the Philadelphia Eagles manage their cap, and it seems like they've got just this ability, even with a starting quarterback contract on their books, to still be able to go sign guys and extend guys. The key to at least their approach has been to do what I just said, adding these voidable years so that you can prorate the guaranteed money out as far as you can, which then reduces the cap numbers, which then allows for you to, you know, acquire more talent. And so when you think about layering that onto Washington, it's the same approach. They're in a great space from a cap space standpoint, but you don't want to kind of use all of your cap allocations on particular players. So if you can kind of manage the cap where you expand out those cap hits, then it allows just for you to have more flexibility, allows for you to go get more guys. It allows for you, quite honestly, to make your current roster, the Terry McLaurins, who are going into the final year of their contracts, as an example, you know, happy by getting extensions done. So it's a long-winded way of saying that they're in a great space whereby if they do it the right way, they can kind of keep this momentum going moving forward.
So, yeah, are there any downsides to those type of things, those voidable years that are pushed out?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, so let's use the Eagles as an example, right? The gamble, and it's a little bit of a measured gamble, is as long as you hit on more of those extensions, more of those contracts where you pushed, you know, year cap allocations into the future. If you hit on more of those than you miss, then you're going to be fine because it's going to lead to wins. It's going to lead to a better roster. For example, in the Philadelphia example, they were able to miss on a Carson Wentz extension, as an example. Like, they gave the kid an extension, didn't work out, but yet they still been able to move on because they were able to get other guys extended early. Guys like Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, and you look at how they've managed their receiver position versus how Cincinnati's measured theirs, you know, there's a stark difference. It becomes way more expensive when you don't do it that way, as an example. But there is, yes, a risk that if you do miss on a contract extension or a contract that you put voidable years in, that you're going to have to live with some dead money for guys that you miss on.
Well, dude, it's funny with the Cincinnati thing you mentioned, because obviously they waited a year and then had to pay way more, a much higher freight, right? But Do you think they could still afford to figure things out with Trey Hendrickson?
Look, I say this all the time. There are always ways to make the contract structure fit your cap situation. Now, the biggest challenge that Cincinnati has isn't really cap management. It's more cash flow. They're not a cash-rich team, right? And so it requires them to do certain things from a structure standpoint that a team like, say, the Dallas Cowboys that are cash-rich, and even though they don't act like it, you know, they don't have to do. So to your Trey Hendrickson question, yeah, there's a way to structure a contract to fit within their cap considerations and bring him back at a number that makes sense for him and makes sense for the Cincinnati Bengals and a structure that makes sense for the Cincinnati Bengals. They just have to have a willingness to do it.
See, we want Washington to construct a contract.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Cincinnati.
Yo, this is premature, right? I mean, we're talking whatever it is, 2 years away. Ryan and I have just had like fun conversations about what we think the number will be for Jaden Daniels when he becomes eligible for an extension.
Yeah.
And we're trying to extrapolate salary cap. I mean, we're trying to extrapolate a lot, right?
Yeah.
What do you think that deal looks like?
I don't know that he, you know, I think the magic question is, does he have a chance to be the first $100 million per year quarterback, right? And it really kind of just depends upon, without getting into all the details, the kind of way you value these deals, you know, new money average per year versus, you know, the true average per year from the day he signs the deal. That aside, while the cap is growing exponentially year over year, right? I don't know that he gets to 100. Could he get to 90? I think 90 is very plausible. And again, 90 is not the end-all, be-all metric, or average per year is not the end-all, be-all metric on these deals. It's really, you know, what's guaranteed at signing and all those pieces. But I think there's a chance that he gets to 90 after year three. And obviously, they would be very smart to, assuming he continues to play at a high level here in year two and into year three, very smart to get him extended as soon as he is eligible after his third year.
Wow.
Man, listen, I'm born too soon, man. A little pissed off here, J.I. But, hey, J., like, what would something look like Terry? You know, Terry doesn't cause a lot of issues and things like that. Right. If he was to get an extension, how would that look?
Yeah. I think his magic number, like you see a guy like Chris Godwin in Tampa, great locker room guy, just like Terry, super productive for the Bucs before obviously having a dislocated ankle this season. And Godwin got like $24 million per year. I think Terry's probably in that same ballpark where it's probably in the mid-20s, $25 million per year, because he is going into his age 30 season. You know, so I don't think he's going to break the bank and be in excess of $30 million per year, but I think he is a $25 million per year guy, not too different than the deal Chris Godwin signed with the Bucs.
You don't think the DK deal changes that, though?
DK's deal is technically $24 million per year, not $30
million.
So it further supports the notion that Terry's a $25 million per year wide receiver.
Okay.
Let me ask you, Jad. Terry came into the league, he was almost 24, 25 at that point. And when he hits 30, that's a lot less than a guy coming to the league at 21 hitting 30. Do they ever look at that type of deal?
In terms of just kind of the wear and tear, like he's only got like 6 or 7 years of wear and tear versus 21-year-old at the same age is going to have 9 years of wear and tear.
Yeah, because when everybody look at the number, age, and I think the wear and tear in the NFL is a world of difference. If you've been in it for 6, 7 years, or you've been in it for 9, 10 years.
I think, you know, regardless of kind of what age they were when they came into the league, I think it's really, well, have they shown an ability to stay healthy, right? Have they been available? And obviously when they've been available, have they been productive? And then when we think about our internal scouting and when we think about our training staff, do we project Terry McLaurin to still continue to be able to play at a high level into his age 30, 31, 32 seasons? And if we're all in agreement that, yeah, it looks great from a trajectory standpoint, then, yeah, we are willing to pay him $25 million per year, and let's just say it's a three-year extension, and maybe, you know, we'll guarantee $50 million of the $75. But all of those things do play into kind of the risk mitigation, risk management part of crafting a contract extension for one of your core members of the team.
So much going on. What do you think happens with Micah in Dallas?
Oh, I mean, the weekend Myles Garrett and Max Crosby got those edge contracts. I mean, that was a great weekend for Micah Parsons, and he is keenly aware of it. He's on top of these things. So, I mean, Micah is going to end up being like a $45 million per year guy. At least he should be. Now, the way Dallas has managed their cap and done their contracts as of late, it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. But if we're talking about where the market is now for edge players, I think the two markets that have grown a lot over the past 10 days or so is that edge market and the cornerback market. So Micah should be a happy guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Jay, I appreciate you, man. Who you got?
Appreciate you, brother, man.
Who you got winning the title?
In the tournament?
Yeah.
It pains me to say, but I got Duke. And I think, look, Auburn's really, really good. And I think Jonai is really, really good for them. But I'm going to go with Duke.
Duke's good, man. I don't like saying it either.
Yeah.
Yo, thank you for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, Jay, I appreciate you, brother.
Hey, appreciate you guys.
All right. J.I. Hallsell, give him a follow at SalaryCap101. Oh, looks like the Commanders just signed Michael Gallup. Yeah, dude.
Uh-oh.
Commanders just announced the addition of Michael Gallup. All right.
That receiving core going to be nice.
You got a speed guy. He's a little bit older, but you got a speed guy.
You need somebody that can stretch a field. That's the one thing this receiving core is missing, is a guy who can get downfield. And Terry does an awesome job of catching those 50-50 balls and getting open. And Noah Brown does a great job of drawing those PIs, but you need a guy who can take the top off of defense, and hopefully Michael Gallup is that guy.
With a last name like that, you have speed. It's a hell of a name, right?
Gallup. I guess that's better than Trotter, right? Trot.
Yeah, you're trotting in.
I like the Gallup signing. I imagine it's next to nothing.
Yeah.
Probably around veteran minimum type stuff. And that's the kind of signing when everybody was talking about, like, oh, people are going to want to play with Jaden. I think that's the kind of signing where it adds up, right? Like, if it's a veteran minimum here or a veteran minimum there, you wonder who the quarterback is.
When you start getting those type of guys, that little thing about people wanting to play with him begins.
We've heard it through the, press conferences, Zoom avails we've done with a lot of these guys along the way. Will Harris's company talking about, the culture and seeing the joy that those guys are playing with and all those different things, that for years never existed here in Washington.
Yeah. It's going to be, I don't know. I like the signing. I don't think folks should play, throw a parade for it or anything, but I think it helps, man. I think it helps with a team that needs a vertical threat. They needed a speed guy. And this isn't an elite guy, but it's also not costing you elite money.
You're trying to build a team, man. You're going to have people at different levels that are going to bring something to that. You're not going to have all top-notch guys. And you need to have those guys that are not top-notch guys that can be effective. And what does Gallup do? He stretches the field. And that'll open it up for everybody else around him.
Well, that was I am sure you guys have talked about it here on the radio show, but for the fans that are, frustrated with whatever they've done in free agency, I think it's short-sighted because we saw this team try and take shortcuts under different regimes and try and sign the world and sign your way into making a Super Bowl run. And what you're seeing now is a team that's kind of poking and prodding, and they're putting in pieces in the short term that can help you get to where you want to go without committing long-term money and tying up your team for years to come. And so certainly I want to see them do some more on defense. I think we're going to see a lot in the draft on that side of the ball. But ultimately, you're seeing them fill holes efficiently, effectively, and cost, penny wise, pound poor, penny wisely.
And I think they're leaving a ton of flexibility for when the Jaden contract comes up. We had J.I. Hallsell on with us earlier, and we kind of just asked, what do you think that Jaden deal is going to look like eventually?
Oh.
And
you remember what I said on the pod when we talked about this?
Remind me.
I said that if Jaden and the Commanders are able to work out a Patrick Mahomes-esque deal where it goes for 10 years and obviously has outs along the way and you can restructure this, it might be a 10-year, $750 million contract. It might be a 10-year, $750 million contract because you're not just building in for where the salary cap is today, but also where it's going in the future. He's going to get, a crazy amount of money.
You know what? I believe this salary cap is now 280 something million, right?
Yeah.
It's going to probably be 300 something million, almost 400 by then.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're really trying to do stuff today worried about that, because Jaden's going to get signed no matter what the hell goes on. I really believe they're trying to make sure that they keep the thing with the cash out and not worry about necessarily salary cap and just get a good team without you don't have to get all top notch guys when you have a guy like a Jaden. And you have other guys that are around him that are very effective. I don't know if they're thinking that far out. Like, oh, we're going to do this deal today for 3 years down the road. I don't think that quarterbacks get paid, well, especially good quarterbacks.
And Jaden Daniels covered up a lot of warts on this franchise, on this roster last year. And you know, I know that we all talk about it, you know, in our different platforms and whatnot, but, you know, fans, you know, want this, you know, they want to win the offseason again. You want to, they want to go back
but
to the fans.
They hated that when it was happening.
Well, they loved it when it happened, and they hated the results.
Yeah, but see, the whole thing about it is you're not going to have four all-pro wide receivers. You're not going to have all offensive linemen that are all-pro. Your defensive line is not going to be all-pro. You got to have some guys that just outplay a certain contract.
Totally. And dude, like, I mean, when you look at how Philly is kind of this example we all keep pointing to right now, and they've drafted really well to supplement the guys they're paying a ton to.
Too.
And what they do exceptionally well and intelligently is pay up. Pay as soon as a dude is eligible. Don't wait. I mean, if you look at the contracts, not Chase is better than all of the other people I'm about to name, but if you look at how they handled Brown and Devontae Smith versus Chase and Higgins, there's a huge delta in what those four guys are making, what the two Eagles receivers versus the two Bengals receivers, and it's because you're proactive and pay them early.
Yeah. Well, you're also looking at an Eagles roster that is ahead of where the Commanders are, which we know.
By mostly draft class.
They drafted really well early, and then they supplemented it with some of these big free agents that they brought in.
Totally.
And now that their early draft picks are starting to come to their second contracts, you're seeing some of their guys having to leave to go elsewhere. Yeah. Can you imagine here in Washington if, you know, they had the success they had last year and half of the Eagles starting defense last year is not in Philly anymore. They're on their way elsewhere because they know they have big contracts coming up for those D tackles and some of these young guys. And so you're seeing this, you know, it's almost a curve as they go. Yeah. You know, you build up to it, and then you have to start kind of rebuilding.
The fact that they hit on their draft picks allows them to be able to do certain things. If they hadn't hit on their draft picks, they would probably be going out there looking for some big names too. But when you draft guys on the D-line and things, and they are playing that good in the first, second year, you don't have to go break the bank. And when you look at what Adam did last year, their draft picks, a lot of them hit. And if they come this year and draft again, and let's say next year the guys from last year and the guys this year hit, then you don't have to worry about those big name guys because you all of a sudden now get your – and that's what people talk about building from the draft. With the build from the draft, you got to be good at drafting. If you can't draft well, you can't build from the draft.
Imagine how different this roster looks if the first and second round picks that they jettisoned last year were legit NFL starters like we see in Philly.
Yeah.
If you take the Emmanuel Forbes and you take Fedarian Mathis and you take – you know, all these guys who they got rid of last year. If those guys are legitimate NFL starters, this defense looks way better. This roster looks way better. Yeah. This team looks way better.
It's going to be, I mean, completely. And I think one dude, I got one of the mailbag questions on All Ears last night was asking what, if any, of the, you know, who that was on Washington last year do you expect to take a big reach up this year? And I think you look at the rookies, and I think, it's easy to say McCaffrey or Sennett, but I think what if Johnny Newton plays a lot better? Like, they clearly made a decision as related to John Allen, and people want to make it a direct comparison to Javon Kinlaw.
It's not.
But I think it's more about Newton than it is about Kinlaw.
I think it may be that, but I think overall when they finish up, it's going to be, will the overall defense be better this year than it was last year? And Javon Kinlaw may not be John Allen. But I think when you look at the sum of the whole, that defense this year is going to be better than it was last year.
I got
and
one
that's
name.
All you need to worry about.
I got one name for you guys. Jordan McGee. Last year in camp, he was making a lot of noise and came down with a knee injury and missed, you know, a couple weeks, what it was, 6-7 weeks or so. And then, you know, by the time he came back, this team was in a legit playoff run and you weren't going to sit there and try and develop a young linebacker.
Yeah.
But Jordan McGee, if he's able to show what we saw last year in camp and learn from the likes of Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner and the rest of that linebacking core, and he's able to kind of take that next step into a complementary role to those guys now, start working towards being, you know, the guy next year. I am extremely excited about what he can become and what he can mean for this Commanders defense.
See, I hear you. I just don't know the direct path to minutes for him and snaps. Like, Newton is your starter. McCaffrey was getting 40-50% of the snaps last year. Like, if everything breaks right for Washington, McGee's your third backer. Newton starts day one. You know what I mean? Like,
the path is, to me, I didn't love Frankie Luvu as much as they used him as a direct defensive end in the defense last year. And part of that was because they didn't have the guys to get pressure on him.
Yeah.
I wanted them to bring in somebody this year that was going to help out with that and let Luvu play that linebacker, the actual linebacker position. Yeah. But they haven't done that yet. So I expect we're going to see probably Frankie Luvu still lining up at defensive end. And when that happens, we've seen Bobby Wagner was a very good player last year. But, you know, he's aging. We know that he's getting older. There, to me, that's his path to get on the field, is in those passing down situations where he can use his speed, his athleticism, to work on those linebacker, on those tight ends and running backs out of the backfield.
Just, if he goes in, he starts playing some minutes early, and he makes impact plays, he'll find my time.
They'll always
find
a way
to get him on the field. And there are guys sometimes who don't play like the bulk of the plays. They may play 30 to 50%. And they have a bigger impact than the guys that play every damn play.
Absolutely.
And not to mention special teams for them, too. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a big part of it.
If you're missing a little bit of breaking news here, the Commanders announced they signed veteran wide receiver Michael Gallup. Had some really good seasons in Dallas. Visited here probably about 10 days ago, and now they've added him to the group. All right, John Walton joins us now, the voice of the Washington Capitals. You can follow him at John Walton PXP on the Rude Guest Hotline. John, another game, another big win for the Washington Capitals, and they have clinched the playoffs. How are you, sir?
Doing well, and yeah, clinching playoffs and being the first team to do so after last year being the last team to do so on the very last game of the year and about 3 minutes left in the third period. So, much different this time. The Capitals are the first team since 1980 to be the last team to clinch the year before and the first the following year. So a lot of improvement. Went over Philadelphia, 46 on the year, and still got a chunk of games left here. So got 13 to go. So very, very optimistic that this will truly be one of the best teams in terms of standings points the Capitals have had in 50 years of hockey here.
You look at this team right now, John, a lot more guys on the team that are more effective, which I think makes it harder for other teams to defend them. Do you see the same where you have multiple guys being able to score at any time?
Yeah, I mean, B-Mitch, that's really the hallmark of this team is, yeah, Alex Ovechkin's been able to keep scoring, but Alexei Protas is a goal away from 30 and a breakout season for him. Connor McMichael has a shot of getting toward 30. You've got Tom Wilson for the first time in his career at 30 goals. Yeah. So they've got a lot of guys that are scoring a lot of different ways and a lot of different places. They've gotten a lot of offense from the blue line, too. And Jacob Chychrun's got 18 goals. I mean, as a defenseman, if you get to 20, that's a big number. So they've scored more goals than any team in the league. They're the best third-period goal-scoring team in the league. That'll win you a lot of games. So they're doing it a lot of different ways. And it's been a lot of fun to watch. I got to keep drinking the hot tea and have the throat lozenges because they certainly may give me a little bit of a workout, but I'll take it. It's been a lot of fun.
I love that. You know, one stat that I've made a point of kind of keeping an eye on this year because the hockey hipsters last year were such jerks about the Caps getting in with a negative goal differential. And listen, last year's Caps team wasn't great. They just had absurd goaltending the second half of the season, and they snuck in as an 8 seed, right? The current 8 seed projection would be Montreal. They have a minus 17 goal differential. So everybody that gave them a hard time last year, just shut up. That's what the 8 seed is generally. but this year, the Caps are plus 73. John, you've called these games for a long time. You've seen this hockey team during all of its eras in the OV time. Does this – hockey's a crazy sport. I'm not talking about the playoffs. You never know what the hell is going to happen. But does this seem like maybe the best team of all these teams?
You know, it's tough to compare. I mean, I think in terms of just raw firepower, I mean, if you look at the President's Trophy winners in 2016, 2017, I mean, the crazy thing is – and this is how crazy hockey is, really, if we really get down to it – the Caps' best team in that era wasn't 2018. It really wasn't. Like, right. they were a better team in 2016. I think they were a better team in 2015. And they were kind of getting to the end of the arc there. It's like, or, you know, they're down 2-0 to Columbus. I mean, at the beginning of that 2018 playoff, it felt like they might be done. As, you know, rebuild and, you know, start over maybe. And they end up winning the whole thing. So some of it is bounces and some of it is – just raw offense. I mean, when TJ Oshie was getting 30 goals and Alex was getting 50 and Nick Backstrom was getting 100 points, that's a very, very good hockey team. And Barry Trotz's time here, that seemed to be a regular thing. Spencer Carberry has this team in the truest sense of the word. This is a wonderful team to be around. There isn't a Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl or that really, really top-end guy. I mean, Alex was that guy, but, you know, at 39, he's not that guy anymore. But he is contributing to the cause, and so is everybody else. And forwards 1 through 12 and defensemen 1 through 6 and both goalies, they're ready to go to war. Spencer Carberry used almost those exact words yesterday before the game. You know, we're ready for it, and that's how they win games because it's a different person every night. So in terms of best team in the team sense, yeah, they might be. In terms of, like, offense, it's maybe a little bit more of a gray area, but they're fun. They really care for each other. I've never seen a tighter group of guys, and I've been here 14 years. I've never seen anything quite like it. They play for each other. They pull for each other, both goalies, regardless who's playing. The other guy's their biggest cheerleader sitting on the bench. I mean, it's just a lot of fun. And if team has anything to do with it, and B. Mitch, you know that. I mean, you got a close group of guys. You can accomplish a lot. You know, that's what I think we're hoping for here.
Yeah. We're talking with our friend John Walton, Caps play-by-play. You can hear his call of the games right here on 106.7 The Fan. You can follow John at John Walton PXP. John joins us via the Rude guest hotline. Well, and John, one thing that I'm really interested, listen, they're playing good hockey in Raleigh right now. The Canes have won 8 in a row. The Panthers look really good. You got the Leafs and the Lightning. Like, that other side of the bracket's going to be good. The next two games are serious bangers. You got Florida defending cup champs coming to town tomorrow at 5:00. We're all going to be locked in on college hoops all weekend, but you got to watch that game tomorrow at 5:00.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go to Winnipeg Tuesday night. Panthers are leading in the Atlantic Division. Winnipeg is tied with Washington in this President's Trophy chase. Each have 100 points. What do you want to see these next two games?
I think a lot of structure. I mean, at the end of the game last night against the Flyers, Spencer Carberry wasn't very happy with the way it went. They got away from some of their details, and the Flyers looked like they were going to just roll over and be finished, and they weren't. They came out firing in the third, and they're a proud team, and the Caps weren't as ready for that as they probably needed to be, and they end up out shooting them 17-2 and kind of had them on the ropes there at the end. So I think that when you look at that, you want to have everybody playing their best hockey down the stretch, and you really want to do it against the best teams. But I think when you're playing Florida, and certainly on Tuesday in Winnipeg, that is arguably the biggest regular season game, not just for Washington, but in the NHL schedule as a whole. That's best on best. They're the two best teams in the league. It's not particularly close. It's going to be in Winnipeg. The Jets got them here in D.C., like a little bit of payback and get a win on their rink. That's going to be a fantastic game. So I think just being able to continue to produce offense, to continue to play good defensive hockey, goaltending, I think Logan Thompson's going to get a little bit more here down the stretch. I think he could very well get these next two. Charlie's from Minnesota, and the Wild are up next on Thursday. I would think Charlie's going to get that one, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Logan got the next two. These games are big, and he's got 30 wins, and in a lot of ways, he's been the hot hand to take nothing away from Charlie. But Logan is the guy who's 30-4, and these are games that you really want to lock down. And you want him playing his best hockey as we come down the stretch here, too. So a lot to look for, I think. But you're right. Big game against the Panthers, the defending champs in town, and the Caps have handled them pretty well so far this year. They've beaten them twice. Hopefully they can do it again, and then we'll head to Winnipeg.
John, this thing is getting down to the wire. Alex scored again. It's at 7 now for breaking the record. Are you thinking this thing can happen?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I think that when you look at the
13 to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's right on the edge. I mean, if you're handicapping, like, when does it happen? Like, this is not going to happen in the month of March. It's probably not happening at the beginning of April either. This is getting down to those last couple of games, which incredibly game 82 for this team, which if you took the math, you say, okay, 0.5, 0.55 per game, whatever it is, you're getting down to really that last game of the year. Fellas, the last game of the year is in Pittsburgh. Can you imagine a world where he gets $8.95, but he does it in Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby sitting there on the other side? I mean, it's at least a possibility when you get down to the end. I really want to see it happen at home. I know everybody wants to see it at home, but if you extrapolate it out, you look at those last three games, like, okay, well, you got a home game or two in there, but there, the last game, let's try and get it before game 82. That would be good for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Dude, I still think I'm clinging to the last home game against Columbus. And I know that leaves him too short, but it would be his first ever goal is against Columbus, and then he breaks the record against Columbus, and it would be at home. I don't know why, but I just feel some level of synchronicity with that. And then I wonder if he does get it early, do you think they let him sit a little going? How do hockey teams handle, like, in our world in football, you want to keep everybody fresh, but if you've clinched everything, by the time you get to the end, maybe you give guys a little bit of a break. How does hockey handle that?
It's different, but that particular, like at the end, the only real version of load management would be, and Alex has done this in years past. I remember it's probably 8 or 9, could be even 10 years ago now. We were in St. Louis, and we had a game. It was a year of the big snowstorm. We had like 20 inches of snow, and a couple of games got wiped out. And one of those games got pushed to the end of the year. And poor Anaheim had to fly here from Orange County for one game on the last day of the year, which was not great for them. But we were in St. Louis, and the Caps were coming home, and it was a back-to-back, and Ovi was sitting on 47 goals. And they say, you know, he likes sitting out that last one if he's got, you know, numbers are squared away. But he's like, he needs 3 for 50. I think he's probably going to be playing in these last two. And he goes out in St. Louis and gets a hat trick in about 25 minutes and took game 82 off. And like,
I love that.
There's nothing more Ovi than that. So he ends up with 50. You could look at the end of the year, and for anybody with bumps and bruises, not just Alex, but anybody where you've got everything wrapped up, if you've got any nagging injuries or anything, you need a little bit of extra healing time, you'll see some guys sit. And I think that's going to happen. I mean, the Caps, they've already clinched. So the only thing left is really division title, you know, home ice through second round, third round, hopefully all the way through. I fear not the President's Trophy. I know a lot of fans do. I said, listen, I would rather them have home ice for four rounds and being able to have that extra home game if they need it. So and be playing the right way. But having said all that, I think you will see some guys get rested just because it's a long year, and you may see a little bit of that down the stretch, but mainly just if guys are injured, not so much for just load management, just to have a night off.
Well, load management is an NBA thing, and it's junk, and hockey guys are the opposite. Neil Greenberg, a friend of the program.
If anybody needs it, the hockey guys need it.
Yeah, they actually need it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you know Greenberg, John. Neil Greenberg's friend of the program. He just tweeted out, Ovechkin watch is at 888. I have the most likely games for him to break the record. April 6th at the Islanders, April 12th at Columbus, April 10th at home against the Hurricanes, April 13th at home against the Blue Jackets, April 2nd at the Hurricanes. And Greenberg's model allows 15% chance it doesn't happen this year. Do you feel like it happened? I had been steadfast that I thought it was happening, and then when he didn't get one against Detroit the other night, it was the first time I had a little bit of pause.
It is, I mean, listen, it's a hard thing for anybody to do at any point, even for the NHL's top players, to put those kind of numbers together in a stretch. And he's trying to do it at 39 years of age. Yeah, there's a chance it doesn't happen, but everything that he has been throughout his career has been about rising to the occasion. And I thought last night, you know, the Flyers are a team that he's always played well against. So he ends up getting that first period goal. He finds a way. He's got 52 goals against Philadelphia in his career. That's just insane.
Wow.
But second most in any single team that he's faced. But when you look at the teams that are coming up, there are a couple back-to-backs, the Columbus home and home. You got a game at Boston, at Carolina. You got to keep plugging away. I think when you look at it big picture, go, wow, not sure, we'll see. But when you look at it game by game, say, you know what? Big man just needs a goal tonight. And if he gets it, then the pressure's off. He's feeling better about things. I think you could see that last night, whereas, you know, been a couple games and the meter's running and you're coming down to the end of the season, but you could see the relief, I thought, as much as the jubilation, is like, hey, all right, got one, 888, let's go. And I think that's, you know, the way it's going to be the rest of the way. You know, whatever game it ends up being, wherever you are in that night, that's all you can control in one night. If you can get any night you can get a goal, you're one closer, and it also affords you the opportunity of having a game where you don't get one and it's okay. And I think we just play that game from now until mid-April.
John, we will be listening for this Panthers game and then definitely. Winnipeg game. I can't wait for that. I told my wife that we're going to watch Caps play Winnipeg, and boy, is she excited. real quick, though, I have two non-hockey things to ask you about, Walton. How's your bracket looking? Now, we used to have a Caps player on every week. I'm aware there's a fantasy football league in that dressing room. I am guessing there's a bracket in that dressing room. Of course, no cash ever exchanges hands. But how's the brackets looking? How excited are the boys for this time of year with hoops?
The guys, I think, are pretty excited. You know, one of the rights of hockeydom come springtime are NCAA brackets, and masters pools are pretty popular as well. So those things are happening. I'm ashamed to say that I did not do a bracket this year. I know absolutely nothing because I never get a chance to really sit down and watch. I did happen to notice we've got Katie Fleury, our studio host, is a Clemson grad. I do know that the Tigers did not fare well. I do know that.
They scored 13 points and won the whole half, John.
Yeah, I saw the Clemson Tiger mascot shaking his head sideways, and so we did have a little fun at Katie's expense on that. But other than that, I know nothing. I know nothing, and I depend on people like you guys to tell me what's up.
Well, guess what, John? We don't know anything either.
Yeah, I watch a lot, John. I watch a lot, I'm last in our pool right now. So
that's the way
nobody knows.
See, I used to do it a lot. Like, I used to run the pool when I was at Hershey. I used to run the bracket there, and I never came close to winning. So I don't know. Maybe knowledge isn't powerful anyway, but
it might not be. All right. This is the last thing. And I'm going to confess something. Left hand up. I am an idea guy. I am very rarely an execution guy. So I talk about stuff and get excited and then just completely forget and go a different direction. I'm like a child in a field that sees a butterfly. I just run the other way, right? However, I actually followed through on something, and it's related to John Walton.
What was that?
John, do you remember?
I'm terrified.
Don't be terrified. I think you'll be excited.
Okay.
I believe it was last week when you were kind enough to give us a few minutes for NBC4, and we did that interview, and you mentioned fly fishing. That, you know, you grew up in Minnesota, right? Growing up, you like to go fly fishing. Some of the boys on the team like to go fly fishing, and nobody knows where to go fly fishing in the D.C. area.
Okay. Well, you've discovered a place to go fly fishing.
Not exactly. what I told you was I have a buddy. Shout out to my friend Steve Lynn, who goes fly fishing all the time. I see it on his Instagram page. Uh-huh. And I actually followed up with Lenny. I said, yo, can you shoot me an email about the fly fishing stuff so I can send it to the Caps guys? And, I mean, sometimes the universe knows what it's doing. He literally emailed me this morning at 11 as you were joining the program. So otherwise, I would have completely forgotten, never forwarded the email. But I now have this email to forward to you. Would you like to tell me your email address over the air to probably thousands of people listening, or would you prefer to text it to me?
I think texting would probably be good there. I get enough junk email as it is, but let's do that. And I'm happy to share with my outdoor enthusiast, Charlie Lindgren, on that. He is,
I think it's a place Blackfish. Out towards Front Royal.
So here's what
Greg, I think Greg does it.
Here's what I can tell you. There's a book, Washington, D.C. area. Now, John, I'm going to confess I know nothing about. This is trout fishing. Is that what you're looking for?
I mean, it can be. Okay. I think the fly fishing part, I don't know that I'll have to get whatever. I mean, where we come from, where Charlie and I come from, it's walleye. But there's
nothing we got walleye here in
Front Royal. So
yeah, you're looking for the Rose River or Susie Q Escataba Farms. I'm going to send you the email. thank you for your time, Walton. Appreciate it, John. Bro.
You're truly a details man, JP. I appreciate that.